At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the California Angels and the city of Los Angeles, on the occasion of Her Majesty's royal visit, please welcome internationally renowned opera star Enrico Palazzo.
Yes, he's in the intensive care ward at Our Lady of the Worthless Miracle.
Hello, everybody. This is your man, Big Ben, Benjamin Chase, and I got Robbie here with me. We're going to talk a little bit of prospects. It's our first Big Three, Next Three of the 2025 season, and we are going to start. We've arranged this a little bit so that we have our American League teams first, and we're going to just do this nice and alphabetical just because, you know, I don't like coming up with random orders, so I just, you know, alphabet works. And so it's just that the A's screw me up because I'm not sure if I should call them Oakland or Sacramento or so they just end. Luckily, it works out that this year they end up they would be in the same podcast regardless of how we do it. So whether they were Oakland or Sacramento. But tonight we are going to talk about the Baltimore Orioles, the Boston Red Sox, and the Chicago White Sox. Robbie, how's your offseason been?
It has been good and bad. The good has been that in one of the leagues that we have been, for some reason, churning commissioners, we look to have some stability at it now. And it is a complex, expensive league. And I'm glad to have some people that are ready to put some time into it. I am one of the commissioners in that league, so it's good that I will have some good support around me. And the bad is that in one of my other dynasty leagues, a 24-team 8x8, we have failed to fill all of our spots. And we had the league champion from last year. Yeah. The league champion from last year abruptly quit.
Wow, dude.
Last day. Yeah, the last day to pay for next year's fees. And we're like, all right, we're waiting on these two teams. And I spoke to one of the guys, and, you know, in fantasy things happen. People lose their jobs or things, you know, whatever. And the guy said, I'm going to need more time if you can give it to me. I said, yeah, no problem. Glad to, you know, hear from you. I'd certainly want you to stay in the league. No problem. We can extend the time. I appreciate that you reached out instead of just said nothing. Whereas the other guy said, to the whole league, I've been real busy, guys. Things have changed, and I'm going to leave. And this is the guy that won the league. And people were pissed because we used to have a rule that if you won money in the previous season, whatever you won, like that buy-in for the following season, which is $100, from your winnings, $100 went to next year. So if you blew your team up to try to win it all, and you did, or you fell short, or whatever, and you walked away, there was some protection for whoever took your team over. Mm-hmm. Well, this guy, his roster was not great, but we are after our fifth year. So it's a 5-year contract league. Tons of amazing players are all Ohtani, Betts, everybody that was a stud 5 years ago or on the cusp. They're all in this draft, Acuna, whatever. So it's a stack draft. And he walked away, and we got two guys to replace for the other two owners. We're trying to find this other one, and it sucks. And that has made this offseason a little less enjoyable than previous years where you quickly fill teams. Because for some reason, we can't get a team or a new GM to come in. And tons of people are interested until it's time to pay, which I'm sure if anyone out there is a commissioner and you're listening, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Joe Guy is really interested. He wants in. He wants to know the rules. He has four questions. And they're like, all right, man, do you want the link to pay? Hello? still there, still interested, and they're gone. So it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
But that's where January becomes more exciting to me. And people leave football and they come back to baseball. And I got to tell you guys, don't leave. Don't leave. Play Dynasty. It's year round. Can be a lot of fun. Prospects can be a lot of fun. So
it's a 1 month till we have some pitchers and catchers report. That's a fun thing to think about.
That is nice.
So there are a few news things, but only a few, because we want to get right into this. So first one I mentioned, or I have on our sheet here, Robbie, is the Roki Sasaki sweepstakes seems to have finalists now. That was announced today that everyone kind of figured the Dodgers and Padres would make it to the end. But how the heck are the Blue Jays of the third team? It just seems like it feels like Ohtani last year. It really does, to be honest. That's well, where this feels time, like. But
the Blue Jays were in the same position where when you had a free agent and the news wasn't everywhere on them, it would come around that, oh, Blue Jays are in or putting an offer or whatever. Like Santander with the Blue Jays right now. It's a terrible idea. They don't need another outfielder who could be a DH. They need a corner infielder, and they need to figure out what in the hell they're going to do with Vlad. And that is that. And of course, everybody always needs arms. But when you get into like international guys, I don't like. They thought they laid the groundwork by signing Hyunjin Ryu. What was it, pre-2020 season? So 19 prior to COVID, they signed him. They thought this was going to like really help to lay the groundwork for other things. Clearly it has not, and or it just, you know, they haven't chosen to go after other international free agents. But I don't know if this is the best card to play. You still, if you're Toronto, you still don't need this pitcher. Like, yeah, of course you want a pitcher. That's a luxury that if you have a decent rotation or allegedly have a decent rotation. But they also have like $100 million wrapped up in the rotation. And then whoever knows what the bullpen's going to cost you year to year. You don't have legitimacy at the corners beyond, you know, well, you don't have it at both corners right now, but you don't have it at either corner after this season because Vlad's going to New York. So it's odd, but I'm more concerned with the Dodgers getting another arm. they can't go to a 7-man rotation.
You know, I have thought all along, and one of the guys on our Discord, and often one of our good chatters as we get into this more, and we will be live in the future on these, folks. This one's pre-recorded, but we will be live in the future. And David Hill, who is one of our really good chatters, he is really big into the Asian market. And he has said,
an interesting way to word it.
I know. He has said from the get-go that Sasaki's dream has always been to be able to play with Yu Darvish. That was his idol growing up. And Darvish has had a number of, you know, meetings with him about his potential move to MLB over the years. The Padres seem to me like they would be a really good fit for him. The thing is, they're already looking at how can we trade away Dylan Cease. God, they almost have too much pitching there, too. You know, it's just, you know, another arm for San Diego to go with all of their arms. And, yeah, it's nice to know that when you look at baseball, it's not a team that desperately needs him that's going to get him this year, of course. So,
right.
But there has been some fallout on the international market. One of the prospects that the Dodgers were lined up with for January 15th, which as we're recording this, that's 2 days away. One of those prospects has had his agreement broken by the Dodgers, and the Pirates swooped in and got him. And this is a guy who's getting $1 million on the international market. So it tells you he's at least a dude. You may not be the dude, but he's a dude. And that's, you know, that could really shape some things this year on the international market, because those guys get dropped from contracts. They're going to have just a very little amount of time to renegotiate. And they're just going to go with whatever a team has left at this point that they can. Yeah. And so that could mean you're getting a bargain on some guy who might normally have been a million and a half player. So,
It's very interesting.
The interesting part to me about the Jays being involved there is the Jays were also involved in another kind of questionable pitching decision market.
Yep.
The Braves and the Orioles have both come out and said, yeah, we looked at Jeff Hoffman and we said, no, that he didn't pass our physical. And the Blue Jays are like, we'll take him. So apparently the Phillies and the Jays should have just had a trade at the end of the season and sent Romano to Philadelphia and Hoffman to.
Well, Romano wasn't pitching at that point in time and Hoffman was putting up his career best stat line. So, but it's an interesting move to add Hoffman on 3-year deal. I guess
The
only thing I can think is that if there is an issue and he does like come in and pitch for a bit and then have a shoulder, whatever it is, I don't know what the problem is. The potential problem is if he does miss a year, there's still time left on the end of the contract to possibly retain value. But they did something with Chad Green when he was injured. It was like a 2-year deal, basically a year to rehab at $4 million and then a year to pitch it for something like that. And then I think there may have been a team or player option at the end. That would have been an interesting thing had Hoffman been injured. He's not. He's just, as we're now hearing, he has something within his body that through imaging has detracted to teams. But we don't know what the terms were for those deals as far as dollars and years. And Toronto may have had the 3-year deal the whole time, whereas others may have had, you know, a 2 or a 5. We don't know.
Yeah.
But Hoffman has been a journeyman starter who failed. And again, it wasn't his fault. He went to Colorado. He was injured when he was drafted, I believe. And that's how he ended up sliding to Toronto. I can't remember if he was like ninth or something like that when he was drafted. He ended up getting traded to Colorado when the Blue Jays were competitive, seriously competitive for a brief period of time.
Yeah,
they've been pretend competitive since then, but it was the 15-16. This was the loaded Jays team. They brought in Tulo and they shipped out, you know, whoever they needed to. And then Hoffman just didn't develop properly and, you know, eventually goes to the bullpen.
Yep.
Even then he wasn't elite. Finally sorted out the last couple years. So he's supposed to come to Toronto and end games. That's the plan. And hopefully he does. It is weird because Jordan Romano seems to have whatever type of potential risk there is involved in Jeff Hoffman. Romano must have had something similar and Toronto said, no, thank you. But for Hoffman, they were like, yeah, I think it's worth it. So whatever it is that other teams are willing to come out and say, yeah, like we pulled the sheet back. Toronto obviously has gone through this with their own former closer and felt like he's, you know, Hoffman's worth the risk. Now that doesn't mean dynasty guys are going to have a blip. They're going to say, okay, he's my guy. I'm going to go get him. But a lot of the redraft community is going to say, oh, Hoffman's shaky because we don't know what's up with that physical like that. You know, they're going to really hold to that for the season. Yeah. But for dynasty, I think Hoffman could, if anything, right now, be a better bargain because people are saying on paper there seems to be something wrong with him.
Yeah. And, you know, we're going to just kind of quick move through this, but the final one, report came out today that the Red Sox, quote unquote, want to sign their top prospects to an extension.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm pretty sure every single frickin' team in the major leagues wants to sign their top prospects to an extension before they get to the majors so that they can pay them less than market value for 7 years. If every prospect wants to sign one of those, I will guarantee anyone on the top 100, your team is ready to sign you up for your first 7 big league years. But this is a little bit notable simply because, and we'll get into it because we have the Boston system here. There's a significant amount of guys who are AAA, AA in that system and knocking on the door. And depending on the level of competitiveness in Boston this year, there's a good chance you see all of them.
Yes.
So that this could make some sense for them to do. To me, this seems like an all-star game announcement for them. Because it'll be a matter of, so how are we actually doing this year? Did we have to call up some of these guys? And if so, let's just, you know, they've got 3 months under their belt. Let's get them a contract for the next 6 years, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
But
it's news, and it might be a slow news day, and that's why it got reported.
Yeah, there we go.
Like you said, if it's any top prospect, that's what can happen. So I get it. But that is a good way to transition us in to the Big Three next three, which we are.
We are professional podcasters here, folks. So
yes, 100%. That's what it says on my taxes. Professional podcaster.
I mean, on my business card as well, you know.
And on your baseball card, I hope.
Yes. Yeah, actually, I have one of those. It's right over here.
That's why I said it. But anyway, so last year we did the Big Three. We did the next three. We talked about the teams. We talked about the player. And then at a later point in time, or as things happened organically in the offseason, we got into the teams and their depth and all that fun stuff. Mm-hmm. It does come out within these Big Three, next three. We will cover a lot here, but what I would like everyone to truly concentrate on is your league and how it's set up within your fantasy league here. Because some of these guys, and I can tell you just because of my affinity for a certain type of player within a position, there is risk reward with these guys, and a lot of them are not going to be your 2025 studs. Even if they're on the Big Three, that doesn't mean that we expect them to walk through the, you know, opening day and they're on a lineup. It means that we think that these are the guys with the highest ceilings within their organizations, and they're close enough to MLB that it makes sense to put them here. There are guys that I've got on my next three that I think have amazing talent, but I need to see them up against higher level competition or repeat what they did in the previous season before I would be willing to put them in my Big Three. And I did keep track, Ben and I were discussing before, of last year's Big Three, next three for these teams. So we've got some teams to compare, or sorry, we've got some players to compare if they've repeated our list and if they went from next three to Big Three or if they dropped off altogether. And as we go through all 10 of these episodes, we'll get to cover all that stuff. But Ben, what do the people need to know that I did not just explain?
Boy, you know, I think the big thing that is going to surprise a lot of folks, we don't have, a lot of times you're going to hear, and I think tonight's going to be one, there's going to be six players mentioned, and it's pretty good odds that Robbie and I agree on four of them with these, all three of these teams. That's just kind of the way it's going to work with these particular clubs, because it's kind of the way it will be. But there's going to be some teams, and in fact, that might not be true, because I went into some projection guys with the Baltimore system for my next three. And so you're gonna get names. This isn't the top six prospects. This isn't
very much so, yeah.
You know, when we get into specifically the Big Three, yes, that is generally the top three prospects. That's how we work that. But that next three, maybe there's a team that has a really neat, I don't know why that's the word I chose, but a really interesting group of prospects that are a ball or below. And so you want to highlight that, even though in Dynasty right now, they're probably, you know, back end of a trade fodder. They're not exactly someone you're building your team around, but they could be very interesting because they seem to have this development system really working that might be 3 years out, and you should really watch that group of players as they move through together in the system. You could have said that 3 years ago about the Red Sox, and they had some guys, and now all those guys are sitting in AAA. They actually used one of them for a trade this offseason. But those guys all moved through in the minor leagues together. And 2 years ago, you would have thought I was crazy for telling you to have Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer. I'm getting ahead of myself here, aren't I?
Yeah.
Back up the track. But I mean, if I would have told you then to have those guys as your as someone that you should be paying attention to, you would have looked at me and thought I was nuts. So, because it's like, well, they've got this guy who's in AAA and he's going to impact my dynasty team way before that. Why would I care about someone who's 4 years away? Well, that's the whole point, is we're talking about these things. So that next three, you're going to get a lot of different things. So,
yeah, we can go superstar shooting all we want. That's the idea with the next big three. Mm-hmm. And then, as Ben said, we'll tell you why the guys are where they are on our list. So, Ben, let's kick it off, 2025. Yep. Let's go with the team that has the most to make up. That's the White Sox.
Oh, yeah.
Now, are you wanting to start with the big three and then the next three, or next three, big three?
Robbie, tell me, who were your big three last year? Because you told me this one might not, or this one for you didn't look so good.
It shook up the White Sox in general. Only two of my six prospects are returning to this list, and none of them have graduated as prospects to MLBers. So last year I had Noah Schultz, Colson Montgomery, Jacob Gonzalez as my top three, or my big three. My next three I can discuss as needed, but they were the ones that were somewhat, you know, a consensus thing. Pitcher, and then you had shortstop, and Gonzalez was just drafted. You know, the notes I've got from him last year, because I saved it all, was he will hit, could move to third base to solve a problem they've had. I'd love to see the power and check out scouting reports from this year. Well, it wasn't good enough of a thing for us to all be excited and hear Jacob Gonzalez's name all over the place. So he's not returning to that list.
No. And for me, I had the Montgomery and Schultz, and like I said, I think that was probably a pretty consensus 1-2 with that system last year. I had Brian Ramos as my third, and he did get some cups of coffee in the majors this last year. He's technically not graduated from the list, I don't believe, but certainly didn't show enough that the White Sox were comfortable just handing him a job and letting Yoan Moncada walk. They went out and they got other reinforcements for that position after Moncada walked. So tells me that they're maybe not quite sure that they've got a guy that can handle the hot corner long-term in Ramos. So, yeah, even my big three there maybe didn't stick. So this year, you still got Montgomery and Schultz back in your list?
Let me write this down. Chicago White Sox big three, Rob. That's what we're putting in here. At 21 minutes and 45 seconds, because Govier loves his timestamps like I love Hawktua. So my number three, and I'll say this is an arms race with the White Sox.
Hawktua!
Oh, my God, it's back. Oh, my God, it's back. I don't care what's gone on with crap after that. I'm stuck in that moment. Anyway. It's an arms race here. I've got a 21 who will be a 22-year-old this year. I've got a 23-year-old and a 21-year-old leading the pack. Hagen Smith is my number three with the White Sox. I can see him being part of a 2027 elite rotation, which means I do not think he's going to be rushed up.
Yeah.
So don't mistake his location here as got to get him in my, you know, keeper league with five prospects. Now's not the time. My number two, Grant Taylor. This is a right-handed pitcher. He's 23 years old, and I think he's about to pop. I also don't think he's going to be rushed up. Hagen Smith, I believe, was second round this past year. Hagen was first round. Thank you.
Yeah.
And Grant Taylor, that's what it was. Grant Taylor was a second round pick last year. Mm-hmm. Taylor is recovering slowly, so we don't have a whole lot of pro stats. I believe he also went to the fall league just to get some innings. He's my number two, and to no surprise to anyone on planet Earth, I have a top prospect for an organization that's a left-handed pitcher, and that's Noah Schultz. But this time it's not biased. This is legitimate. I call it a hunch, guys. I think he's good. Now, I mean, it's a matter of when Chicago wants to put him up, right?
He's a little tall for you though, Robbie. I mean, you usually like your lefties to be 6'5", 6'6". He's got a few inches on that.
Which I got to be honest, I'm attracted to every additional inch of that guy. Yeah, he's got everything I want and more. We could get into what he's done in dominating at the minor league level. But what I want to know is, when do the White Sox want to start to employ some of these guys in their youth. Yep. Like they've signed Martin Perez. They're putting in Bryce Wilson. They also signed a couple of Jesus Take the Wheel picks right there, baby. They're putting guys in that are going to be short term solutions to five innings on any given day. So they've covered 60 starts with those types of filler arms. Which
and they're younger.
They're not pushing Schultz. Which I
they're younger with. Arms that they have up. I like Burke. I think he's a guy that someday is going to be a really valuable Andrew Miller type. Like he was going to be like a multiple innings in the bullpen, really good for your holds leagues type of guy. I don't know that I like him as a legit starting pitcher long term. Jonathan Cannon to me is a guy who 5 years from now, we're going to be talking about him in the same type of breath that, well, of course you don't like him, but the Wade Miley types of the world that just seem to kind of put up a 350 to 410 ERA most years out there. Not real good with strikeouts, but they go out and somehow they make 25, 30 starts a year, pitch 150 innings, and don't really help you, but don't really hurt you. And now, I
could take offense. I don't dislike Wade Miley types. I dislike
just
Wade
like
Miley.
Him. Oh, okay.
It's
okay.
Him.
Yeah.
It's
what
he did to me.
This is
specifically to that man.
Yep.
Style of player. I would happily have Wade Miley's fill my rotations. And then you sit them, stream them, whatever you do. But Wade Miley, go to hell. Just that individual.
Yeah.
And for fantasy purposes, I'm sure he's a good man and all that stuff. But
no, I think Cannon's a guy that is going to give you in a season 17 to 20 quality starts, that type of a pitcher.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But isn't going to likely come out with a ton of wins because he's not going to dominate teams and he's on the freaking White Sox for the next.
Right.
However many years that we're pretty sure they aren't going to have a team to really give him a lot of support. So, but I have one of those three in my big three. I have Noah Schultz in mine, of course. Colson Montgomery returns for me, and a lot of that is based on his Arizona Fall League performance.
Okay.
He blew up his year this year, was not good. And a lot of it was swing decisions. And he went down to the Fall League, and I think until the last week of the Fall League, he was number one or number two the entire time in on base. He was just making a lot smarter pitch decisions. He had more walks than strikeouts. And if you got concerns about him playing short or third, there's enough power there to where it could be just fine either spot. I'm really not worried about that, but not getting on base was a problem. He wasn't going to be able to be a major leaguer if he can't get on base in Double A. And he really just looked like a different hitter in the Fall League. My third guy is actually one that they got, and this is where my Pale Hose Law Firm comes into play, is the law firm of Montgomery, Montgomery, and Schultz. Which seriously sounds like a stinking law firm that you could have a advertisement for. But I have Braden Montgomery as my third, recently acquired in the Garrett Crochet trade. I liked him a lot in last year's draft. I thought that the Red Sox might have gotten a steal on him. And now the White Sox might be the team that really gets to benefit from that. So.
Yeah, that fair enough. I was looking, and again, the White Sox are an interesting team because, maybe I'll wait till we're done. Well, when we do the wrap up, I don't want to accidentally tip off a next three on you there. But I'm glad that you didn't have any catchers. So should we go to another team's big three, or should we wrap up the Sox?
Let's wrap up the Sox, and because. Yeah, they got some fun things to chat about with that organization, even beyond their next three. But since you went first on the big three, I'll go first on the next three here. And just this is why I giggled when you mentioned this catcher thing, because I do have two catchers in my next three.
You did what I'm not willing to do.
Edgar Carroll, I think, is a legit catcher for them. I really like him. possibly by the end of the year taking over behind the plate, because defensively he is a very solid catcher. He should hit for a good average, maybe be a 10 to 20 home run at the very top type of guy. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be an elite offensive catcher for you, but he should be a very steady behind the plate type of catcher. With everyone doing the two catcher thing, I think Carroll comes up as a catcher this year and pairs with Corey Lee. I was like, yeah. It's Corey.
Former Houston top prospect, Corey Lee.
Yes. And they'll kind of see if Corey Lee is the guy that they want to keep behind the plate going forward as a secondary catcher. Kyle Teal is the other one the other catcher I had in my next three.
Naturally.
But I think his bat is good enough to where he can play outside a catcher. I think he could be a decent first base or right fielder, and he's got the arm to maybe move into the outfield and has enough bat to where he could work there. Then my third one is Hagen Smith, and the main reason I don't have him in the top three is simply because he is so stinking electric. I have to admit, watching him pitch, though, scares the bejesus out of me. Watching his delivery, watching everything. That guy is max effort 24/7, and it comes out fairly smooth. But holy, I mean, I don't. He's the type of guy that to me looks like he is just going to crazy himself into an injury.
Okay.
That said, I thought the same thing of Clayton Kershaw every single dang game he went out there for the first 10 years of his career, because that man still is very intense on game day on the mound.
Yep, and never caught up to Kershaw, right? Injuries have never caught up to Kershaw.
No, so I mean, he's had a very healthy career. No, but I mean, in all seriousness, if he has a run for 7 years like Kershaw did, I'm going to look like a fool for not having him immediately in my top three. Of course, if he has a run like Kershaw did in his first seven, everyone will look like a fool for not having him as a top 10 prospect. So,
yeah. And I've got Smith in the location a couple reasons. One of the big ones is, like I said, it's a new rotation that's going to come through for the White Sox. So they've already, with a history, and now because of their trade with Boston, you can say a successful recent history of quick promotion of a pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Crochet came up, put him in the pen, then following year, you know, the injury happened. That's not my suggestion on Smith, but you have a track record that's recent with coaches at the minor league level who all understand that that might be what they want to see up in the big leagues here. Now, they've changed, you know, management around in that time. So the idea might not be there, but at the same time, other teams are doing this also, where you see a guy's doing well. Alek Manoah with the Blue Jays came up relatively fast. Smith could be a 2026 in the rotation, 2027. He's the man or a man in the rotation. But I still think that, like he's the big one for me. And to your point with the catchers, I get it. I understand that somebody's got to catch. And when I was going through my catcher dynasty ranks, which y'all need to go check out the work that Oob's producer and host Govier puts in at the Palazzo podcast, 2Ls2Zs.
Which, by the way,
1,000 subscriptions.
We are 14 away from 900.
That's right.
Can we make it a goal by the time we get done with our big three next three? Last year, we made it a goal to, I want to say 750. Was our goal last year, and we went from like 6-something to 750 by the end of our big three next week. Can we get that 1,000?
We need that 1,000.
We need that 1,000.
If you're listening, that's great. When you get the chance, go hit us up on YouTube and subscribe, because as you know, it's free. It costs you nothing, and it really helps the mental health of six grown-ass men who put time into this podcast. And
Palazzo.
Yeah, he's one of them. And if you really want to see growth within, you know, what we do here, subscribing helps immensely with that, because once we get over 1,000, we get to do things that you can't do with less, as Govier is talking. Lock that in. So anyway, I'll go back on topic, since I guess that's what we're here to talk about, as much as we're excited to promote the Palazzo podcast on YouTube if you're listening in podcast form, go hit us up there. And Govier makes amazing graphics and things, and it's worth looking as well as listening. So my next three for the White Sox, I'm repeating my second guy, George Wulco, is back on the list. He had an excellent 2020.
Yeah.
257 average. You're like, oh, that doesn't sound great. Yeah, he was 17-18 for that. 357 OBP. I mean, yeah, sure, it was a big K rate, but also 13 home runs, and I believe he was promoted midseason.
Yep.
So I'm really happy where I did pick him up. He was an eighth round pick in 2023 of the White Sox. It was a steal of a deal. He's a beast of a man. He's my number four guy. If we're ranking this, like it's either just the next three, but I've got him listed at four here. And of course, I can't get enough of arms, and Chicago got me all juicy to look at these guys. So Aldrin Batista, 21-year-old right-handed pitcher, last year in 110 innings, 116 Ks, which is not crazy, a 115 whip. This was at high A. I believe it was 2021 he signed. J2, I think when they reopened, I think that's when he came in from what I was looking at. And I believe he was is a four-pitch guy. I was looking at too many pitcher things today to remember everything, and I don't have scouting reports I click on. I just put it in the memory bank and put a very quick little stat line about them here. The last guy I've got is left-handed pitcher because I just can't get enough. And this was my second-round pick in 2024 that I mistakenly said Hagen Smith earlier, who was, of course, a top pick. Blake Larson, left-handed high school pitcher from Des Moines. And 6'2", you know, this is a potential future building block. They're going to take the Noah Schultz angle, I'm hoping, with him. Obviously, he doesn't have the height, but he is 6'2". I like him a little taller, but he could still grow. So I've got Larson, Batista, and Wulco as my next three for the White Sox. I'm comfortable with that. Last year, by comparison, Ben, I felt comfortable with my three next, and it was Wilfred Varas, who went back to AA and was perfectly fine, but was not ready for the next level beyond that. And I did trade him away in a dynasty league recently for Jason Foley, I think, at Detroit, in a save, a league that has save holds, thinking like that was a safer bet because third base outfield for the White Sox, I don't know where Varas is going to be. I did have Wulco. He was my fourth last year as well. And then Tanner McDougal, who is a 2020 fifth round pick. 21 maybe it was. I've got it written as both, so good for me. Oh, it was he's back from Tommy John, double A this season if he keeps it rolling. But when I went through all of my names and everything, he didn't even come inside my top 15. So when I looked at the old list, I was like, whew, good for me. So but between Batista and Larson, maybe one of these guys is going to fall off too, but I don't think so. I like these guys.
So my next were, I had Carroll last year. I had Jake Eater, who came up, had a nice got to the majors. And then Christian Mena, who they ended up trading to Arizona. And he ended up having a fairly, you know, nice little run in Arizona, got up to the majors in Arizona. One of the things that I, you know, and Eater's another guy who was like that. They have done a nice job of getting other teams' prospects. You know, it wasn't a fun year for White Sox fans. Let's just, you know, 121 losses, that's not fun. But the other guys I had listed on here, Jairo Iriarte, you know, former Padre, came over in the Dylan Cease deal. Really nice pickup there. William Bergola from the Phillies, and I don't honestly remember the deal that he came over in. I think there was a reliever that might have gone to the Phillies mid-year. But Bergola is the type of guy who, somewhere down the road, he is going to win a batting title with a 400 on base and a 380 slugging. That's just the type of guy he is. He's going to be a, you know, if he was in Colorado, this would be a guy that you would want to own because he's going to put up like a DJ LeMahieu type year where he's, you know, 330 with 60 doubles, you know, but never is able to hit 20 home runs unless it's a park that's just perfectly sculpted for him. Right. Yarel Perez out of the Dodgers trade when they made that trade with the Cardinals and Dodgers this year, that did bring in Miguel Vargas, who isn't a prospect, but, you know,
another project.
Yeah. Tough project is a good word. And then I have on here mentioning that Winkelman Gonzalez and Chase Meadreth were also part of the trade from the Red Sox over to the White Sox in the Garrett Crochet trade. Both of those guys, probably high probability major leaguers. I don't know that they're really high probability fantasy players.
Right. And
both of those guys are probably going to be major league contributors. I don't know that you really need to worry about them terribly for your fantasy team. But if you can go in the trade market, there's 6 guys I just mentioned right there that aren't on our big three, next three, that are going to very likely, most of them contribute to your major league team, and get that out of the trade market when you're tearing things down. You did pretty well.
Yeah. You cut costs and you can turn that into who knows what, production in the future.
Yeah.
If things go right, I guess obviously Teal was the big guy from that trade. And to your point, Ben, as much as I would like to see Teal move to another position, because I'm not sure what they're going to do with him yet, because he just hasn't got to games. We haven't hit that point with the White Sox where we're getting daily reports about minor league camp as to what these guys are doing. I was very confused at the whole White Sox catching situation, because you brought in prior to the you've brought in 3 catchers through trade, which tells me
after
you got the first catcher. Yeah, after you got the first catcher in Corey Lee, you were like, well, we'll just double down. The best guy to get is, in the, was it Milwaukee deal? Is that how they did that with Kuro?
No, Angels.
Angels, thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll take, we'll take him. He suits us. And then again with Boston, it's like, well, Teal suits us. Okay, we'll take him. And now you've got 3 guys that are all in a similar kind of 6-5 year span here of potential overlap. What are you going to do? That's exactly right, Ben. They're going to choke. They're going to choke on it. It's not all going to work out. Between the 3, best case scenario is one's traded and makes a career out of it, and the other 2 are able to flourish as White Sox. But Teal's going to need, in my estimation, obviously in yours, need to be the guy that is able to produce off the position, because they were willing to pay. Well, not they didn't pay. They took Crochet out of their lineup to put Teal and others in plug and play for a bigger plan here. So he's the guy that pays off. That could just be pressure on him, though. Anywho, too much talk about a team that was that bad. Ben, let's move on to the Red Sox, who did make the big trade. They still have a farm system. It did get hit a little bit. Who do you got for your big 3 on the Red Sox?
So last year I was looking at a very similar top 3 as what I have this year. Last year I had Marcelo Meyer. I had Roman Anthony. And then I had Sidan Rafaela. Well, obviously, Rafaela has graduated this year, coming into this year. And those other 2 are still there. And the guy who took his place is the guy who we never did this podcast, Robbie, but if we would have picked the best performance in the minor leagues last year, Christian Campbell very well was that guy.
Yeah.
And so there's your top 3 right there, all likely to start the season in AAA. And so, very interesting group right there.
Hey there, this is the Blotto Podcast. If you're in a hotel room right now, check to see if there's a Bible in your second drawer, courtesy of Gideon's. We'll be right back after these pointless messages.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Yeah, I got the same one. I didn't think it was going to be much of a conversation on that point. It's all obvious. And mine last year, I had Rafael my number 1. I took a chance because I was feeling cheeky, and I went with Nansen Zantello, who was their second round pick.
Yep.
And he fell flat on his face
hard
on his debut. 157, 279, 558 line, 7 home runs in less than 300 at bats at A ball. Not going well. Now, he's young, and you can have a down year. But I also had another guy that I was trying to play that game of forgiveness with in my next three last year, and that's not going to happen. My other guy was Marcelo Meyer, who did, again, return back to the list. So mine is nice, quick, and dirty as well. So I'll give you my next three, since that's how we folded it last time. I've got to make sure I keep these notes. People. So I believe Franklin Arias, and Britton, you're going to love this. He's Venezuelan. Now, he's not a catcher. As we know, Britton loves
Venezuelan catchers.
The bloodlines aside, he wants to know the homeland. So anyway, this is a 19-year-old shortstop who came over, who signed in J2. Stateside debut was excellent, 309 average, 409 OBP, 9 home runs in 314 at-bats. That is a smooth arrival in my estimation. So I am a fan of this guy. And the shortstop position in Boston, they could try to speed it up. They could slow it down. I just don't want them to screw this one up. And I'll get to why afterwards. But my number five is Miguel, I think it's Blyce. I said that correctly. 21-year-old center fielder, right fielder. Legitimate stolen base threat, but the average is not there. OBP is, and it's the defense that could make him into an MLB-er. And I'm thinking more at the moment without improvements, fourth outfield type guy, not necessarily your lock and play 140 starts, but that's because I think there's enough there with stolen bases that he can find a way. You know, he is only 21 to develop himself into more than what he currently is. Beyond that, my final guy, and I know everyone's wondering, why haven't you mentioned a left-handed pitcher yet? Here he is. Check this name out. Do not, under any circumstances, be late. Connelly Early. That's his name, everybody. It's Connelly Early.
I thought you had somebody else queued up, but I'll bring him up after my next three, because I picked him up and I'm like, this is going to be a guy that. But I'll mention him in just a bit.
So. Okay, I'm interested in that. 23-year-old Early is a 23-year-old. He was a 2023 fifth round pick. He's now in Double A. He fits the mold. He's 6'3", left-handed pitcher. Excellent. Last round pick in your dynasty drafts, 23 starts last year, 138 Ks in 103 innings pitched, and a 1.18 whip. So Connelly Early, that's my flyer type guy too. I'm interested to know who the guy was that you've got there, Ben. So do tell.
Well, let me first off, Arias I have in mind as well. Yep. And then I thought, here's one of my favorite things about the 2024 draft for the Red Sox. They picked two combo players, and one of them fits your profile perfectly, because right now they're projecting he's going to pitch rather than hit, and he's a 6'6", 250-pound lefty. And, Peyton Tolle from Texas Christian, and tremendous. I loved watching him hit. The guy just has legit holy crap power when he really leans into it, but he didn't hit a lot this year. He spent most of his time on the mound this year, and he didn't hit well when he did hit, so I'm guessing they're leaning him toward the pitching side of things, which that's okay. I'll survive, you know. But then they went out and they drafted another guy in the eighth round out of high school, who I kept hearing, Conrad Kaysen is his name, and I kept hearing comparisons to Michael Harris, he's a pitcher hitter, and for Baseball Reference doesn't have him listed as any position right now. They just like his name, and then rather than his position being right underneath his name, it says bats right, throws right.
Okay.
So like they aren't even sure yet whether he hasn't played any minor league games yet. But eighth round picked out of Georgia, and I think if he would have had a definite one way or the other, mound or field, he would have been a solid guy. He also was in a really, really good shortstop class, and we're going to get back to that later on. But the 2024 draft has a lot of very solid athletes at shortstop out of the high school class that got drafted in the fifth round or later and could end up popping in the next couple of years. So it's something to keep track of, because normally your high school shortstop class is really shallow and or really top heavy. This was a lot of athleticism for a very deep class this year's in this year's class. But Conrad Kaysen, keep that name in mind, because like I said, he's right now, they're going to allow him to do a two-way thing, and we'll see how that works for him. But the name that I was going to, I thought that you would just jump on, because of the name, for one, but a lefty, yeah, he's only 6'1", but he's 6'1", 170. So he's just all kinds of arms and elbows going everywhere. Mm-hmm. 14th round pick in 23 out of Cal State Fullerton, JoJo Ingracia. And last year in A ball, 21 games, 12 of them starts, finished five games as well. So really kind of your very versatile role guy, 58 innings, 1.85 ERA, 0.99 whip, and 93 strikeouts in those 58 innings. Yeah, that's a pretty solid ratio.
What is the spelling on the last name?
I-N-G-R-A-S-S-I-A. Ingracia.
I-N-G-R-A-S-S-I-A. Got it. Thank you. Okay.
But that was when I came across him as I'm going through the system, I went, oh. And then you watch a little video on him. And like I said, he's just all kinds of funk from the left side. But it's funky, but he repeats it every single time.
Right.
And so it's that type of thing where I could see him working multiple innings, and he might even be a five and dive type of guy as a starter if they really want to go that route. I kind of think they'd be better off using him as a, you know, they used a lot of guys like Tanner Houck this year as literal five and dive type of guys. Bringing in someone like this who could pick up two after him, it would be a very solid piece to have in your bullpen. And it sounds like, for instance, they're going to do that with Garrett Whitlock. They're putting him back into the bullpen, and that's a guy who likely gives you multiple innings.
Put
Red Sox and other
players in a position to succeed, right?
Red Sox have, you know, we talked about, you talked about an infielder in Arias. They have kind of a backlog. One of the guys that we didn't mention, I'm sure a lot of people are probably screaming at their headphones right now, which don't do that on the bus. People look at you weird.
You know who could be doing it is Sync3131. He likes to make comments when we did Dynasty ones. Sync3131. Yeah. We want it all, buddy. We want the love. We want the hate.
Yeah.
Tell us where we did wrong, and we're here for it.
But Yoelin Cespedes is another infielder. Yeah. He's one that I'm sure a lot of people are like, why aren't you talking about him?
He's just not enough yet.
He's I would say it's really early in the process.
Next three for me, so I'll wait because we got time.
And Mickey Romero is one who's probably going to be at the level of or the level ahead of Franklin Arias along the way. High school kid out of California. Mm-hmm. Really steady guy. I don't know that he's ever going to be an elite guy in anything, but he's a really steady guy in everything. And then just for one more guy to throw out is a name here. Holy crap power. And if you want to try and spell the name, good luck. Garcia is the last name.
Oh.
Jostinkson.
Oh, is that like a J-H?
J-H-O-S-T-Y-N-X-O-N.
Wow.
So perfect name for Wheel of Fortune, because you get the J, you get the X, you get the Y, you get the Z. By gosh, you can you're
take
just
your
really
time spelling that. Yeah.
but that's a he led the system in home runs last year, and this is the type of guy, you know, his approach reminds me a lot of like a Jorge Soler type. When he really gets a hold of one, it really goes far, but he's also really freaking aggressive at the plate. And so how that's going to keep translating as he hits the upper minors and then into the majors, we'll see.
Right. Yeah. The only guys I wanted to mention that I hadn't yet was my next three from last year, because one of them goes back to kind of talking about somebody we mentioned earlier. Blaise Jordan was one of the guys last year. Oh, I was really looking for good things. Now, we did talk about him before and kind of going through some of the mental health struggles that he has. His 2022 results power went down, so he kind of went regress path instead of path forward. Not that I'm out on him by any stretch. He's still a young man, but he's just not within that realm of Big Three or Next Three at the moment. Richard Fitz, who came over a year ago in a trade with the Yankees, he did get some MLB time. His line was not really good in the minors, but it's like hidden when you look at the MLB line in his 20, I think it was 20 and two-thirds innings pitch. He was very good. I think it was four starts he had in September. And then I did have Franklin Arias on my list last year as well as the sixth guy. He's moving up for me. So I am on him officially. Not that it really matters. But Ben, now let's get to what I would argue is boring, which is Baltimore prospects, because everyone, us included, has dove deep on these guys, and now the system has come up, and the system is at the MLB level, or so not the system, but a bunch of the players have bubbled up through to the MLB level. A lot of the others are on the cusp, but they are not, you know, a championship caliber team yet, because they do have to pitch. It's not just about developing hitters, and they have failed miserably. Outside of Grayson Rodriguez, it has not been great on the homegrown end, and signing a NPB 35-year-old to be your SP5, that's a Toronto move. So Baltimore doing it's a little scary. But what do we got that maybe they could use for trade bait or to fill in this year or you know, whatever, on the big three for the Orioles?
So looking back last year, I think it's you're going to have two of the same three for me. Jackson Holliday was on there, and he's obviously no longer on our prospect list anymore. Mm-hmm. But then I had Kobe Mayo and Samuel Basayo last year. And Mayo and Basayo are both back again this year. And then I add in, because he's one of my favorite guys to watch, Vance Honeycutt.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I like him a lot as a I think he's going to be a slow burn in their minor league system, especially with the depth they have in the outfield in their system. But that could be a really good thing for him too, because he's going to need to fail a little bit. Because when he failed in college, he was successful. It's just kind of...
Yeah, it would be nice if he was the kind of player, because you just mentioned the depth, if they said, you need to graduate from these levels in a year, not in half a year. So, you know, nail your high A, do it. Go nail your double A. Now you're in AAA, you're on the cusp, and it's probably, hopefully, going to be more than one season at that point, so that he is a ready-to-come-up guy, much like it used to be where, you know, 20, 30 years ago, the thing was they you know, like you would in a video game, they beat the level, and then they went to the next one. And they, you know, when they stall out, they stall out. But I think that's a good one. I had last year, Heston Kjerstad was my three, Mayo was my two, Holliday my one. Obviously, two of the three are off the list. Mayo, I mean, you can't deny the potential of Kobe Mayo. Obviously, the debut was not what, you know, fantasy people and Baltimore fans wanted. But you also can't walk away at this point in time. That's just stupid.
No.
You have
17 games, folks. I mean,
yeah, you have to understand that there's a lot that goes on when someone gets a call up. There are horrific logistics depending on your family, as far as like getting mom and dad and your sister and whomever to the game. And then what do you do now? And is this your life? Are you here? Are you looking for an apartment? What does the team do? Who knows? Like, I don't know what Baltimore does. I know some teams have, like Toronto has the advantage of having a hotel in their ballpark, so they can actually have players that get traded come and live there the rest of season, or show up because they made the team out of camp but they didn't have an apartment and get themselves situated. I don't know what it is in Baltimore, but maybe there's something that made that, you know, going to the ballpark a little harder than it had to be. Maybe routines got changed, because he was just crushing in AAA. So I feel like he can have the reset. It'd be great if he broke camp with the team this year. But if he doesn't, I still strongly believe Kobe Mayo should be and is their top potential fantasy prospect, because you get into what a real baseball prospect could be with Basilo, who's my number two.
Yeah. This Mayo is a legit, or was working on a legit 300, 400, 600 season in AAA as a 21-year-old, 22-year-old?
22-year-old, yeah.
Yeah.
So this year he'll be at 23.
But that's great. Like, that's, I mean, I think we've gotten spoiled too much on the guys who come up at 22 years old. I mean, we're just watching one of them this offseason. You know, Juan Soto came up at 19 years old, was freaking elite. Now he's hitting free agency at 26 and getting a $760 million contract because he hasn't even hit what we know is your physical peak yet.
Right.
And yet here he's already on track. I mean, he's on a track right now that looks like Ted Williams. I mean, it really does. And I'm not saying that lightly either, because I realize how sometimes those hyperbole type of comments get made. But if you look, it's real close, folks. It's kind of scary. But guys come up and they struggle. That's normal. And that's okay. We need to be okay with prospects take 2-3 years. And boy, if you want to find out a good way to build yourself, if you're on a rebuild right now as a fantasy, as a dynasty team, really good way to rebuild in a hurry, go find those top prospects that struggle right away and get a bunch of them under market. I mean, a really good example is Kyle Tucker. Look what Kyle Tucker basically brought three legit future major leaguers to Houston this year. And he struggled when he first got going in the majors. And I remember, because I made investment in his baseball cards, he was really low as far as value for the type of player he was. I picked him up in a bunch of dynasty leagues that particular offseason because I thought, well, this guy's better than what he just showed. And lo and behold, you know, this is a guy who's kind of averaged about a 25-25 year for the last 3, 4, 5 years now. Know the talent. I'm not saying just go out because the guy's a number 89 prospect on a top 100 list and he struggles when he comes up. No, that's there's a reason why most of the top 100 list never makes it. But if you get into the top 20 of a top 100 list, you have a really good chance that you're going to have a nice major league career of some variety.
Absolutely.
And so that type of guy coming up and whiffing right away, that might be a good guy to make a bet on.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, like if you're able to, as I've got Mayo in several leagues, people are wondering, you know, what am I doing? So I ended up having in two leagues to just put him in as my rostered third baseman right now, because mm-hmm. I previously left it blank. People are like, oh, so you're not sold on Mayo? Okay. Like, let me make you an offer for him. And I'm like, no, never mind. It's just that I would like an actual for sure going to start MLB third baseman. So I left the spot blank. But because people are like, oh, let me try to buy low. I'm not that guy. But there will be others out there, or shiny new tool. One of the shiny new tools that Baltimore got in the 2023 draft, Eric Bradfield Jr. is my number three guy.
Okay.
I'm looking at the potential for him to have this weird combo of 130 plus runs and RBIs at the MLB level. And it is going to be like 100 runs or more, because he has the potential to steal 70 bases.
It's going to be a Juan Pierre slash line, stat line.
Yes, and it's possible that he could be like a 250 MLB batting average with a 370 OBP, and that could be as early as 2026. And it's just a matter of, is Baltimore in a position when they're ready to have him up that he doesn't need to potentially slot into a starting role? Could he start to come in the sixth, seventh inning when they've got a guy on whatever first or second that they want to move around, or somebody coming up who hits the ball really hard and they just want to like get the run in? And then he's playing the field the rest of the game, obviously. And then he finds himself playing on, you know, Thursdays before the team flies out for the weekend, or he's playing a lot of Sundays. So he would get 2-ish starts a week. I mean, this is how real baseball works. This is not top prospect, starter, all the time stuff goes. But this might be where Bradfield Jr. comes in.
Where, and with that type of profile. Slow, yeah.
Right? It's not immediate.
But. Yeah. And in today's game, teams aren't as big on that all-speed sort of guy. Mm-hmm. But I mean, value wise, it's very similar to Pierre, to Juan Pierre, in that, you know, back then Juan Pierre would get on base at a 370 to 390 clip, hitting 310.
Yeah,
I think
his average was really nice.
Bradfield is going to be 250 and be that 370 to 400 type of on base guy, and they're going to have similar other numbers. That's the thing, is although I might warrant that Bradfield's very likely to poke out 5 home runs a year, whereas Pierre hitting 5 home runs would have been like his holy crap year. You know, he was happy to hit 5 doubles in a year, but.
Yeah, and Bradfield, again, like, he does have the ability to have some OPS for you.
Yeah.
And I don't mean, you're like, we're not talking 8, 10 or anything, like, just to not crush you, because he is going to be able to get doubles, which means he'll be more valuable in points leagues than you think, because the stolen bases are not valued like a home run is, whereas in your straight head-to-head categories leagues, the stolen bases are one category. Yeah. And home runs are one category. So
his steals are going to be fun.
Yeah, if you can line it up right, he could be a really exciting fantasy guy, and sooner than later. So I'll move quickly to my next three so that I can wrap up my dudes here. I've got, I'm calling him my number four, but like I mentioned before, these are just the next three. Luis De Leon, left-handed pitcher. Yep. He came over a trade with Minnesota, and I've liked him since that trade. 6'3", fastball, slider, changeup guy. I think, he wasn't in the fall league. I don't believe he was in the fall league. But but I think my next guy is Juan Rojas, 21-year-old. Yes, he was in the fall league. That's the guy. And let's see. Last year, he had 76 Ks in 72 2/3 innings, only gave up 3 home runs. This is why. 3 home runs in those innings. 2 of them, though, were in the AFL. So it wasn't until he got up to the guys who have been seeing AAA hitters and all these, or AAA pitchers, and all these things, that he gave up a couple. End of season also, so you can, I am at least a little forgiving on that one. 31 walks, not ideal. Control clearly needs to be dialed in a little more. 21-year-old left-hander. You knew I had to have one on the list. Well, I got two. And then my last guy has some of them MLB bloodlines. Joshua Laronzo, whose brother was a Dodger, is now with Detroit. Theron. Yep. But this one's an 18-year-old third baseman. And I found a couple fun things. The most funnest, technically speaking, is that he trains with Tatis, which I normally wouldn't care for because he's a cheater, and I would say, cheater by association, but we're going to let it go because I like this guy, and third base prospects are both fun and lacking. And Baltimore's got two of them. So he's got really good bat speed, really good exit velo. He's an OBP guy. He's got the D to play third base. And I did find a really really interesting website, and I apologize, I don't have the name to share with you guys, but I'll try to find it, where they had complex league stats and his percentage with runners in scoring position. Like, for the year, his average was not good, but he had like a 350 average in 14 at bats with runners in scoring position and 2 outs. Like, weird stat, right? But they were basically saying, under pressure, he's good. So free swinger, but when it's time for the rubber to hit the road, he could to really turn it on. And he was a 2023 J15, we'll call it, J2 class signing, played rookie ball last year. So I like these three guys. And I mean, we know the system with Baltimore's fun, but that's my next three. Ben, who do you have?
So I kind of feel like Boston might be about where Atlanta was in 2020, where all the guys have now hit the majors and they just need them to mature together. And they're going to be at that potential World Series team as long as all the cards fall right. And, they acquire a Jock Peterson or whatever, those sort of things. Because, pearls, people. The three guys I put on here, Baltimore has the ability to kind of dial in and look for holy crap athletes, or a guy who can do one thing, holy crap, well, and use that as their launching off point for a particular player. And so that's where I went with this. DJ Layton is was their sixth round pick, and he comes in, it's part of that really deep shortstop class. This is a switch hitting shortstop from North Carolina who, holy crud, does his video remind me of young CJ Abrams. But not, he didn't put up the crazy numbers that CJ did in summer competition. And so that's really what turned CJ Abrams into a top 10 pick and likely gave him the latitude which that he still does, even though. Him. Yeah. Well, like, but I think if he's not that reputation, Abrams, he's not the worst defensive shortstop in baseball and still playing for the Nationals at that position. Because he is both of those things. So, but DJ Layton is a ridiculously talented athlete. I am really excited to see what he can do this year. The next one I had was Steven Martinez. And this was a J2 guy in January of last year, 6'4" and 200 pounds. And I think that's light on the weight. He has absolutely filled out with some man muscle already at 16 years old. But 417 OBP, hit four dingers in 41 DSL games. And yeah, 51 strikeouts and 168 plate appearances. He's freaking 16 and 6'4 and adding muscle by the day right now.
Right.
But well, Jesus, when he gets a hold of
17 at the moment, but yes.
Yeah. He was 16 last year when he was doing 16, this.
Yeah. Just to clarify. Yeah. So nobody's thinking he's still 16. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, geez, that is a ridiculous frame to work with. And like I said, you know, Baltimore has the type of system where they have the young guys up at the major league level, so they can kind of say, hey, what can we throw against the wall? You know, let's get a 6'4", holy crap, specimen of an athlete and see if he turns into anything. You know, the last one I have is Patrick Riley. They acquired him last year from the Pirates. And this guy's slider might be the best in the entire minor leagues right now. It is a ridiculous slider, and he has 95, 96 to go with it. Sometimes he knows where that's going. He walks five per nine still, unfortunately. But he also struck out 146 over 119 in the third innings. So he has the frame and the pitch mix that makes you think this is a number four type of starter, 6'3", big body right-hander. Just has all the makeup that you're like, yeah, that's what it looks like. And, you know, so Vanderbilt kid too, so good stock. And then I know it's one more than our three, but the guy who they've got a couple other fun ones. For one, I caught one that I'm sure you will enjoy, and that's Ty Weatherly. He doesn't do a lot of things.
What was it, sorry?
Ty Weatherly. His brother Sam is actually in the minor leagues.
Yeah, I recognize the name, the Weatherly name right away. So I'm looking for a Ty Sutherly. Ty Weatherly.
Ty Weatherly, yeah. But the other guy that I picked up, Austin Overn, O-V-E-R-N. He was their third round pick this year out of Southern Cal and went to Southern Cal to play football and baseball. And last year was his first year focusing on baseball and, you know, hit 270, 349, 461. So, I mean, nothing amazing, but then went to the Cape Cod League and was 314, 412, 535.
Okay.
Just ahead of the draft and got a lot of attention there. And I think there's going to be a lot of growth that needs to come, but this guy almost put up a 400 OBP in his minor league debut in 21 games. Oh, and he stole 16 bases in those games. You know, this is a holy crap athlete that was a legit two-sport player at USC. And so those are the type of guys I always want to keep an eye on, because things can happen with an athlete like that when they start to focus on the game and they get a couple years. So he might be a guy at 24 that all of a sudden is hitting the major leagues, and you're like, oh, well, what happened to him? Why did it take him so long? Well, he's finally focusing on baseball for the first time this year. And so this will be his first full season as a professional focusing on baseball. So
every time I hear about an athlete who's now concentrating on baseball and, you know, they've stopped football or whatever, Anthony Alford immediately comes to my head, and I immediately hate the player. So I now have to work in reverse, like, no, it's okay. Like, not all of them are going to be like that. They're not all going to end up being highly touted prospects who don't get to hit their full potential. That's an interesting one. Weatherly is also interesting. Undrafted free agent in 2023.
Yeah.
So that's, is like a said, good one to watch what Baltimore does with him.
This was, like I said, when I looked him up, I thought, gosh, this is a Robbie guy, 6'6" lefty that went undrafted. Yeah.
I probably blew by him based on current pro time, like when I looked through, because I was just kind of looking at like pro innings are at what, they're 45 innings professionally. That's why I was like, 24, I'm going to wait, like, or whatever, not going to dive in.
Well, in 5 years at Ball State and didn't really distinguish himself in any of them. So it's easy to pass him over, but as a pro, his entire minor league career so far, 47 innings of 209 ERA, you know, 62 strikeouts. There's something there. The thing that I think this is the one that I was watching. No, he's a right-handed. Sorry, not a righty. He bats left, throws right. But he's 6'6", and he comes way over the top. So he has a breaking pitch, Robbie, that it moves horizontally and vertically multiple planes as it's coming to the plate. And you're like, how? I mean, he ended up getting featured this year on some of the most, like, the best minor league pitches of the year by Pitching Ninja.
Okay.
So, I mean, this is a legit guy that you're like, you know, there's something working here. Yeah, it's low 90s. But low 90s coming from over the top like that looks like it's dropping out of an airplane at you. So it can be a tough, tough angle to pick up when you get a 6'6 and he's bringing it up and over the top like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, and he's also just available in your dynasty leagues.
Oh, of course.
Because I just looked and he's not taken in any of mine. I got some with some deep rosters. And that's how you fly down below. You find those little guys in, you know, chats like this by listening to more of the Big Three Next Three. So I'm sure, just to reiterate, you guys listening got something out of it, especially the YouTube viewers, because we know how Govier makes his magic work. Stand up and shine! Don't just stand up and shout. Stand up, go over to your computer or your phone and type in Palazzo Podcast. Subscribe to it. We want to be over 900 before February 1st. That's the goal now, Ben.
Yeah.
So that we can march into the season, march the month, with 1,000 subs. That's what we want to go big. We're aiming high this year. Just like the next three, we're looking at the ceiling. We don't want to look at the floor.
Yep.
So that's the first one, Ben. We got 10 of these to do. We got one done.
One done. Woo! Hey, but one is more than none. So, and like I said, in the future, folks, these will be live and you'll be able to comment to us, but please do comment on the recording that's on YouTube. Let us know your thoughts. Come to our Discord, to the Palazzo Podcast Discord. That's linked on our Twitter bio X bio, if whatever you want to call it now. Sorry, Elon. I still refuse to call it X. That's a naughty movie.
You can find me
that's
at Truth
Social.
Not
a social media. Oh, God. That's a whole nother deal. But it also, if you go look up the Palazzo Podcast on X, you're going to find a link to our Discord and let us know what you get out of this. Let us know if there are questions you have about these three teams that we didn't get answered, and we'll engage with you there.
Happily, you know, yep.
And definitely talk ball, because, hey, that's what we're here for. You know, Robbie and I, you know, we haven't had the opportunity yet to crack open a beer together in person. Mm-hmm. But we get to talk ball all the time. And I got to tell you, there's nothing I like more than finding someone I can sit and talk baseball with. So,
and I drink a lot, unrelated to this conversation, just a general statement.
Yeah. So if you're here for beer and baseball, you've come to the right place. That's come right. Back again each week on Monday night. We're going to record, and those are going to be live. You'll be able to pick those up with us, and we'll have a good time.
Yeah, we're going to aim at an hour and always go over. But the plan is to be 1 hour.
It's with a this. Power hour. You know, it's a power hour. It's kind of like a baker's dozen, but just a little bit more.
Exactly. So. Well, anyway, that's one in the books. We don't know how to end a podcast, as you can all tell. So we'll try one more time. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
The power of prospects is a curious thing. Make a person trade everything for a king. Wyatt Langford is your one true love. For a prospect, you'll trade all the above. It's cruel sometimes, but it might just save your life. That's the power of prospects. That's the power of prospects.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.